This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, March 25th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. KUAF is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large, a coal-fired power plant may be forced to shut down unless it can meet new EPA standards. Plus, we learn a little bit more about the Arkansas history the Pryor Center for Oral and Visual History at the University of Arkansas has collected. Also, the latest edition of Arkansongs, Roby Rock has political and business news updates from around the state and more. But first, the Arkansas House has approved a bill that prohibits the sale of electronic cigarettes to minors. E-cigarettes are battery-operated devices that heat a liquid nicotine cartridge, producing a vapor that users inhale. House Democratic Leader Representative Greg Letting has sponsored the bill and says the devices should be regulated like traditional cigarettes.
These are devices that were initially intended to be smoking cessation devices, but as the children who testified in support of this bill and rules on Wednesday testified, they are now actively marketed as alternatives to smoking, and they are actively marketed towards teens. We feel that if you've got to be 18 to buy a regular cigarette, you should have to be 18 to buy an e-cigarette.
The House voted 76-8 to pass a bill calling for a $100 fine on anyone who gives or sells an e-cigarette to a person who is younger than 18 years old. The Arkansas House of Representatives has advanced legislation one supporter says should take a little of the ego out of holding office. The House voted 82-3 Friday to pass a bill that would prevent government agencies from naming buildings after public office holders until 10 years after they are out of office. The bill's sponsor, Representative John Burris, a Republican from Harrison, says this law would solve some interesting situations that have occurred in various districts around the state.
I will just tell you that you could drive a couple places in the state and you could find buildings that have been named for legislators that were subsequently convicted of federal crimes and spent time in prison. That is not a good situation.
Meanwhile, Democratic Representative Jim Nichols of Sherwood spoke for the bill, saying it could limit self-aggrandizement.
This type of bill has been before the body before. It has never gotten this far that I'm aware of. And I was in favor of it with the other authors, and I think it needs to take the ego a little bit out of our positions.
With passage by the House, the bill is headed to Senate committee. One school district in the area received high marks for its online transparency efforts, while other school districts have room for improvement. The nonprofit Sunshine Review grades local and state governments on their level of transparency based on the amount and types of information made available online. The organization gave the Fayetteville School District an A+ grade for its transparency, garnering favorable rankings in all areas. The Bentonville School District was ranked second best among the state's 10 largest school districts, receiving a B- grade for having incomplete data regarding academics and taxes and no information online regarding public records. Other schools didn't receive quite as favorable grades. The Fort Smith School District received a grade of C- for either incomplete or no information online regarding elected and administrative officials, public records, academics, and background checks. Springdale Public Schools received a D grade, having only favorable scores for providing information regarding its budget, contracts, audits, and academics. And the Rogers School District failed the Sunshine Review's ranking rubric, only having favorable scores for its contracts and academics information available online. More information about the transparency rankings for school districts or other governmental entities can be found online at sunshinereview.org. The Bella Vista Property Owners Association Board of Directors will continue to seek input from association members on how it should address a potential budget shortfall. Late last year, the POA board presented a 10-year baseline budget projection. Through 2022, the association expects revenue of around $160 million, while cash requirements for the same period are estimated at $222 million. That leaves the association with a projected shortfall of $62.5 million, even after figuring in all POA investments and reserves. The POA board will discuss methods of addressing the projected shortfall at its Talk with the Board forum at 5:30 tomorrow night at the Highlands Clubhouse on Pomona Drive. The nationally renowned Geosciences Department of the University of Arkansas has received a boost from one of its alumni. William and Donna Willis of Hot Springs have made a $100,000 gift to the university to create an endowed scholarship in their name. When fully funded, the William H. and Donna M. Willis Endowed Geology Fund will provide unrestricted support for graduate students seeking master's level degrees in geology. According to a UA news release, William Willis graduated with both undergraduate and graduate degrees in geology from the U of A and currently serves as vice chairman of the Arkansas Geological Survey Board. The Razorback baseball team made a clean sweep during its three-game road series over the weekend. The number 17 Diamond Hogs thrice defeated the sixth-ranked South Carolina Gamecocks in Columbia, South Carolina. On Friday, the Razorbacks overwhelmingly won with a score of 15-3. Saturday's final score was a little closer, Arkansas 4 to South Carolina 2. Then yesterday, it took two extra innings, but the Hogs ended up with the 5-3 win. The sweep of the series marks the first for the Razorbacks against the Gamecocks in Columbia and the first time the Gamecocks have been swept at home since 1999. The Razorbacks return to Baum Stadium tomorrow to open a two-game series against Mississippi Valley State. Tonight, more cool temperatures and a slight chance of flurries. Expect lows of 23 degrees across northwest Arkansas, though the wind chill could be as low as 12 degrees in Eureka Springs and as low as 7 degrees in Harrison. It'll be slightly warmer in the Arkansas River Valley with lows around 26 degrees. Tomorrow, expect partly cloudy conditions and slightly warmer temperatures with highs in the low to mid-40s in northwest Arkansas and a high of 48 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow night, mostly clear with lows from 22 to 25 degrees in northwest Arkansas. In the Arkansas River Valley, expect partly cloudy conditions in the evening, then gradually clearing with a low of 28 degrees. An aging coal-fired power plant in northwest Arkansas may be forced to shut down in 2015 unless it undergoes an expensive retrofit to meet new Environmental Protection Agency standards. Facility co-owners SWEPCO and Arkansas Electric Cooperatives say the Flint Creek Power Plant in Gentry is critical to our electrical grid and support the upgrade. But opponents say it's an opportunity to replace a polluting facility with cleaner alternative technology. A public hearing on the matter is scheduled before the Arkansas Public Service Commission on March 28th. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
The 1,500-acre, 528-megawatt Flint Creek Power Plant facility in Gentry is co-owned by SWEPCO and the Arkansas Electric Cooperative Corporation. SWEPCO operates the coal-fired plant, which went online in 1978. SWEPCO spokesperson Peter Main is based at the Fayetteville Service Center complex off Township Road.
Flint Creek serves as a base load plant, and as such, it's designed to serve the 24-hour, 7-day-a-week needs of customers.
Meaning the Flint Creek Power Station provides the girth of the electrical need in our region.
Well, the Flint Creek plant is at a point where it has been serving this area for about three decades. It really has been a mainstay of northwest Arkansas throughout much of the growth that's taken place here. It is still setting production records, including one set in 2012 for the longest production run that it's had in its history. And we have an opportunity to continue that with the proposed retrofit.
The Environmental Protection Agency has issued new regulations to reduce coal ash, mercury, and greenhouse gases from U.S. coal fuel generating units. One-third of our nation's coal fleet could be forced to retire or undergo expensive retrofits. The agency estimates the improvements will prevent thousands of premature deaths associated with asthma, heart attack, and cancer from toxic air emissions. But the Flint Creek facility, Maine says, uses state-of-the-art clean air technology.
Now, the new environmental controls are an enhancement and significant expansion of that. We'll be completely changing out the low nitrogen oxide burners to a whole new generation of those burners, and supplementing that with a technology called overfire air. And again, that's to maximize the combustion of the fuel. And we will be adding activated carbon injection for removal of mercury. and a scrubber with a fabric filter, which is designed to remove primarily SO2 and additional particulates.
Peter Main says both SWEPCO and Arkansas Electric Cooperatives will invest up front to retrofit Flint Creek, but plan to ask ratepayers to foot the bill.
The project cost is approximately $408 million. That would be split equally by the partners in the plant, so $204 million each. The estimated impact for SWEPCO customers beginning in 2017 after completion of the project would be for a residential customer using 1,000 kilowatt hours, which is fairly typical, would be about $2.97 a month, or about 3.85%. AECC is estimating the impact for their customers would be about 3.4% increase.
Certain power companies may retire some units to avoid the expense, but operators of three coal-fired plants in Arkansas requiring the retrofit are seeking a declaratory order from the Arkansas Public Service Commission to proceed.
Well, because this was a significant investment for SWEPCO and AECC, we elected to go to the commission. This was not a required filing, but we wanted to go to the commission and to lay out what our plans were, our analysis of the various options, and to put that analysis in front of the commission. That process does provide for public comment. We made that filing with the commission a little over a year ago, in February of 2012. So there's been a whole series of filings by all the parties involved. There was a public hearing in October of 2012, and there will be a second public hearing on March the 28th. In addition, the public has the opportunity to submit letters to the commission through the commission website or by mail.
Coal is abundant and cheap, and for years provided a majority of our electrical needs. Nearly 1,400 coal fuel generating units operated in the U.S. in 2010. And now it's time to phase out coal completely, says Glenn Hooks. He's a senior campaign representative based in Little Rock who works with the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign.
And we've been working on stopping new coal-fired power plants from being built, but also working on retiring existing coal-fired power plants that are older and dirtier. We keep up with them. We work on every single coal-fired power plant all across the country. And just since January of 2010, more than 140 of these coal-fired power plants have announced plans for retirement.
On March 28th, the Sierra Club will present their case at a public hearing conducted by the Arkansas Public Service Commission in Little Rock. Hooks and his team cite persistent toxic air emissions associated with coal incineration.
Great amounts of carbon dioxide or lead or arsenic, any of about 30 hazardous air pollutants are present in a smokestack from a coal-fired power plant.
Unlike some states, Hooks said, Arkansas lacks alternative and sustainable energy components, including wind, geothermal, and solar.
We have a pretty solid mix of energy-producing fuels in the state, a fair amount of coal-fired power plants, natural gas-fired power plants. We have one nuclear plant, and then we have about 9% of our power is provided by hydroelectric dams.
And the only way to wean utilities off coal, Hook says, is to make the leap into alternative energy development.
What we are proposing, Sierra Club is proposing, is that we get the state off of these old coal-fired power plants because we have options that are cleaner and that are less expensive to ratepayers. And that's what this upcoming PSC proceeding is all about.
The Sierra Club is not standing alone on this issue. Other environmental agencies, including the Union of Concerned Scientists, have asked regulators to weigh the cost of upgrading coal fuel plants, which are moving towards obsolescence. But SWEPCO spokesperson Peter Main disagrees because shutting down Flint Creek will compromise the ability of power companies to meet demand.
While that may sound good, the practicality of replacing a baseload power plant with 24/7 requirements with solar energy or wind energy and energy efficiency simply does not meet the needs of SWEPCO's customers and AECC's members.
Some coal fuel facilities are converting to natural gas, now plentiful due to unconventional natural shale gas drilling. But SWEPCO and the Arkansas Electric Cooperative say they would rather close Flint Creek because the cost to convert the facility and import natural gas are prohibitive. Plus, Maine said the current power grid draws on efficiencies and alternatives.
We have a substantial amount of wind energy, more than 400 megawatts currently serving our system. Wind energy comes from some of the strongest wind energy resources available to us, which are in Kansas and Oklahoma and Texas.
Peter Main also pointed to Flint Creek Power Operations paying forward in the regional community.
As well as our ability to attract new business and new industry with a reliable power supply and an affordable power supply. We also have a substantial employment and economic impact and tax base. We have 69 people working at the plant. We have a payroll of $3.9 million. We have a property and personal property tax base of around $1 million. And the extended impact of that plant in terms of purchasing and additional jobs created out in the community is in the tens of millions of dollars. So we have wanted the commission and other parties involved to understand that we're talking about families and businesses and a substantial economic impact on the community. Because others talk about the importance of jobs in other industries, this is important to this community. It's important to us and to our customers, but to our employees as well.
Consumer advocate Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel has weighed in on the project in an email for this report. Spokesperson Aaron Sadler wrote that the Attorney General supports the retrofit, citing the economic benefit the plant provides to the region. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
For more information, visit arkansas.gov/PSC. Each week, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas looks back at the previous week of business and political news. Today, he says tax cuts and the proposed steel mill super project had lawmakers' attention last week.
A legislative report on the Big River Steel Mill project offered a second opinion on the state's $1.1 billion super project. It questioned an initial report from the Arkansas Economic Development Commission. The executive summary for Big River Steel reviewed steel market conditions and a financial cost-benefit analysis. The report said that the potential market for Big River's products is roughly 9 million short tons over the next 10 years, but the report warns that decreasing margins could affect profits and corporate income taxes. It also reviewed two cost-benefit analyses and pegged the AEDC report as perhaps to some extent overestimated. AEDC Director Grant Tenniel responded that he did not see their cost-benefit analysis as inconsistent with that provided by the consultants. Reports from Arkansas-based trucking companies and numbers from two closely watched national freight reports paint the picture of a national economy that is soft and uncertain, but is at least moving in the right direction. The Cass Freight Index reported a 5.6% increase in shipments in February, which helped counter a January decrease of nearly 4.8%. The February increase also ended four consecutive months of index declines. Cass uses data from $22 billion in annual freight transactions processed by its information processing division to create the index. The American Trucking Association's February truck tonnage index rose 0.6%, down slightly from a revised 1% gain in January. Counter to the Cass Index, the February trucking report marked four straight months of increases, a streak not seen since late 2011. Atlanta-based Phoenix Metals Company plans to invest $12 million in a new 65,000-square-foot metal processing and service operation at Chafee Crossing. It will add up to 40 new jobs with an average wage of about $15 per hour. The deal was finalized on Thursday. Phoenix Metals has 12 operations, including a processing site in Russellville. Senate members met earlier in the week to form the legislature's first aerospace and aviation caucus. The industry accounts for more than $1.8 billion in U.S. exports and 9,000 jobs in Arkansas. The caucus said it will aim to educate legislators and highlight the aerospace, aviation, and defense industries and their economic impact on the state. Representative Darren Williams, a Democrat from Little Rock, and Senator Jonathan Dismang, a Republican from Searcy, touted a bipartisan jobs bill called the Arkansas New Markets Job Act. The bill could lead to significant investments in Arkansas. It encourages private sector investment in small businesses. particularly in low-income regions, by providing premium insurance tax credits tied to private capital investments in new and existing businesses. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Update.
This is Ozarks at Large. More than 80 concerned citizens showed up at a regular meeting of the State Pollution Control and Ecology Commission in Little Rock Friday to discuss a new swine factory farm under construction near Mount Judy in Newton County along Big Creek, just 6 miles upstream from the Buffalo National River. During a 2.5-hour comment period devoted to the issue, commissioners heard numerous complaints about the lack of notification on the confined feeding animal operation, or CAFO. The 6,500-head hog farm plans to discharge 2 million gallons of liquid swine waste annually, stored in ponds and spread on nearby pastures as fertilizer. Opponents worry the waste will impair the Buffalo River's water quality. The Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality did host 6 public meetings on new general CAFO rules in 2011 for swine, dairy, and poultry factory farms. And ADEQ did post public comment notifications about the new swine CAFO on its websites for 30 days last year. But Gordon Watkins, one of about 50 individuals opposed to the project at the meeting, says the method is confounding.
I don't know how many people randomly search the ADEQ website, but it's buried amongst dozens and maybe hundreds of other listings on the website, and the sheer size of the files that they post make it really difficult to download. For example, the notice of intent, which is the core document that comprises the permit, is 260 pages long. It's 80 megabytes, and you have to click on that and open it in order to read it. And a lot of people have been trying to access it now, and they get disconnected. They're unable to download it. And then once you do have it downloaded, it's not searchable. So you've got to scroll through. It took me 3 days just to get through it all.
An informational meeting hosted by ADEQ has been scheduled at 6 p.m. May 8th in Jasper in the Carroll Electric Cooperative Building.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with ArkanSongs. Raised in West Memphis, Arkansas, horn player Wayne Jackson helped craft the rhythm and blues Memphis, Tennessee sound, especially typified by Stax and High Records. Known particularly for his trumpet work, Wayne Jackson can be heard on R&B hits by Otis Redding, Sam and Dave, Aretha Franklin, and countless more. He got his first trumpet at age 11. Jackson established his credentials early on.
Bought me a guitar when I was about 7, I think. I learned to play a little from the Church of Christ minister's son. And then when I was 11, Mother bought me a trumpet. And when I blew into it, it made a really pretty sound, and I was just in love with it. And then that's what direction my life took from that moment on. I mean, I had my guitar case and my trumpet case in my bedroom, and I'd play my trumpet till my mouth hurt, and then I'd play the guitar until my fingers hurt. Spades, changed our name to the Marquis of Steve Cropper and Duck Dunn, myself, Packy Axton, Don Nix, Terry Johnson was the drummer, and Smoochie Smith played piano, and Ronnie Seuss was the singer. And we went in and recorded a song and called it Last Night.
Recorded on his first day in a studio and released in June 1961, Last Night by the Marquis hit number 2 on the R&B charts and number 3 on pop. From there, Wayne Jackson played horns on many R&B and rock songs, which continue to endure. Whether fellow Crittenden County native Johnny Taylor, Sam and Dave, Otis Redding, Rufus Thomas, or Booker T and the MGs, if the song was on Stax Records and had horns, and a lot of them had horns, it was probably Wayne Jackson playing.
One day Steve Cropper called me and said, "Hey, come over, I need you to come play on the record." So I went over there and played a recording session with them. I was there every day for the next 10 years, making records with everybody that came through the doors of Stax. I was just having a big time.
Shake it like a bowl of soup, yeah. You let it go loop the loop, yeah. Put your hand on your hip now. Come on, let your back won't slip. Move your body like a hip and then shake. Lord have mercy, shake. Earlier in the morning, shake. Late in the evening.
Wayne Jackson and his longtime partner, saxophonist Andrew Love, backed Otis Redding at the 1967 Monterey Pop Festival. The festival was the first major American rock festival. More than 50,000 fans witnessed Redding's triumphant show firsthand, and many more have seen it on film. The Memphis crowd wasn't sure what the emerging psychedelic scene would think of their suits and dance steps, but they were embraced. And the rest of America, beyond the South, had been catching on as well. But Otis Redding, the music standard bearer, died in a plane crash that December. Wayne Jackson's career did not end with Otis Redding or even with Stax Records. In fact, Jackson's career was just getting started. From Crittenden County, here's the West Memphis Flash, also known as Wayne Jackson, heard on Try a Little Tenderness by Otis Redding from 1966.
Young girls, they do get wearied wearing that same old shaggy dress, yeah, yeah. But when she gets weary, try a little tenderness, yeah. You know she's waiting, just anticipating for things that she'll never, 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 never possess, yeah, yeah. But while she's there waiting, and without them, try a little tenderness. That's all you gotta do. It's not just sentimental, no, no, no. She has her grief and care. But the soft words, they all spoke so gentle, yeah. It makes it easier, easier to bear, yeah. You won't regret it, no, no. Young girls, they don't forget it. So easy. All you gotta do is try.
Trumpeter Wayne Jackson of West Memphis heard on Try a Little Tenderness by Otis Redding from 1966, recorded in Memphis. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. For more information, visit arkansongs.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Pryor Center for Oral and Visual History at the University of Arkansas collects Arkansas history. They have collected scores of interviews in the past few years and have an ambitious plan to gather even more conversations in the near future. The center also has a massive archive with the voices of Arkansas history donated by Channel 7 in Little Rock. Recently, Randy Dixon, the director of the Pryor Center, talked to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums about some of that history.
My background is in television news. I've spent my entire career at KATV in Little Rock, the ABC affiliate. I was there for 31 years. The last 10, I was the news director. And in 2009, we worked out with the Pryor Center to donate 26,000 hours of archival footage.
26,000 hours?
Yes, to date back as early as the earliest we found is some film from 1926. It was the second annual Hope Watermelon Festival.
Oh my gosh.
Not sure where it came from, but I've spent the last year and a half before I came to the Pryor Center working with them as a consultant and going through the archives and have found some pretty amazing things. I mean, I worked there my entire career and I'm finding things that I didn't know were there.
And I'm sure it's on all sorts of different things. You mentioned film from the 1920s, and you probably see the history of how television was recorded.
That's right. When I started at KATV, dating myself, I was 19 years old and was hired as the first ever videotape editor. There was this new technology coming into television. They were making the transition from film to tape, and they hired this kid to figure out how to use and manage the videotape. We were on tape number 9 when I started, and then it grew to 26,000. But Jim Pitcock, who was the news director at the time, was very forward-thinking, knowing that the film was valuable and eventually would not be able to be used. So he built reels, spent several years transferring film from the 50s, 60s, and 70s on transferring them to these videotapes. Well, now the videotapes are very old, and we are in the process of digitizing the videotapes before they're damaged to the point, because of age, that they won't play, and we're saving that. And then the plan is to eventually have it available on the Pryor Center website in a searchable format that anyone can view it, anyone in the world.
Is it safe to say almost everything that's been covered by Channel 7 News is involved in this collection?
Yes.
Everything?
Well, everything post-1960. In 1960, there was a fire, burned Channel 7 to the ground. The studios took all that film with them. But there is previous material to that that was collected after the fact.
Well, that brings us to kind of what we're talking about today, which is from time to time, you're going to come in and we're going to listen to some Arkansas history.
Sure.
And we thought we'd start this off with just kind of an overview of what we're talking about.
This first one blew me away when I found it.
This is Bear Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
And this is...
This was an interview that was done in 1967. He was in the state, and he just mentioned sort of matter-of-factly that he almost coached at Arkansas.
But in 1950, I believe, I don't know, 1951 or 2, I had verbally accepted the job at the University of Arkansas and honestly meant to go. I had no idea that Kentucky would refuse to let me go. And when I went back, we stayed in session with the committee and the board all day until after midnight. And John Barnhill was on his way, I think, to Louisville to meet me the next day. And then when they just wouldn't release me. And then a lot of people in Arkansas thought I was using that for prize or something, that I had no intention of coming. But I really meant to come. I had already talked to my staff about it and told them I was coming. And Everybody thought I got a raise at Kentucky, but not coming. But that's not true. All I did make them mad.
Okay, you and I are both big sports fans.
Mm-hmm.
And before we heard this, we had no idea that Bear Bryant was minutes away.
Didn't have a clue.
From being the coach at Arkansas.
Right.
Wow.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
this next one you really like, right?
Yes, because Dizzy Dean is an Arkansas native.
Right.
And
a legend.
Yes. It predates me, but I did know that he was, after his playing career, which was ended kind of abruptly after he had an accident in the All-Star game.
Mm-hmm.
He slid into second stealing a base. Imagine a pitcher stealing a base in an All-Star game. That would never happen now. But he was beloved as a television announcer on the Game of the Week by everyone except English teachers.
Exactly.
And he talks about that here.
Do you still get letters from English teachers back when, of course, you were broadcasting and telecasting nationwide? I know you still do some of that, but they complain so much about the language that you used. Have you improved your English, Diz, or not?
Well, you know, I was broadcasting the ball game here not too long ago, and there's a Spanish broadcast going on. And when I got through with our broadcast, they asked me to come over to be their guest. And there was two Spanish guys there talking Spanish back to, in Texas, and Spanish people broadcasting a ball game. And they says, now we're going to bring Dizzy Dean in here. And I walked in there and sat down, Bud. And they says, Dizzy, do you speak a Spanish? I says, partner, I don't even speak good English.
The word I remember most, I guess, was slud instead of slid.
That's right, Bud. I use slud all the time, and I use ain't. Like Will Rogers once said, a lot of people don't say ain't eating regular, and I'm going to keep on saying ain't.
Actually, though, you always knew better, didn't you?
No, that's the only way I was raised. After all, I didn't have an education. And, I, you know, slud, when I got the letters from the school teachers about slud, you know, slud is in the old English dictionary, which I didn't know, but someone told me and sent it to me, you know, and said the slud is in the old English dictionary, and it meant that a fellow's hit the dirt, he slid into a mass of mud.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I use. But I didn't know that, but that's my lingo. And the way I said, if a fellow slid, he slid into home, he slid into third. And that's the way I broadcast the ball game.
Now,
what a character.
Yeah, and the other voice we heard there.
Bud Campbell.
Bud
legendary.
Campbell. Yes. And Bud tries to give Dizzy Dean that out. Well, you knew better.
Yeah, no. Nope, really didn't. Speaking of Bud,
yes.
You know, he did some ABC broadcasts, some regional broadcasts, and they loved him at ABC Sports. And whenever they would come to town to cover the Razorbacks, Channel 7 would throw this big party. Well, one year, Howard Cosell came, who loved to give Bud a hard time. And he spoke at the Pleasant Valley Country Club at a dinner in 1972.
I do want to say one thing about Bud Campbell. Known him a lot of years. Mediocrity always seeks its own level. There's absolutely no question in our mind in the headquarters in New York, Bud, that given the right opportunity and the right business, you've got a future. But all kidding aside, we're very proud of Bud Campbell. We know he's the voice of the Razorbacks. We know he's probably the most identifiable broadcast voice in the state of Arkansas. We're very, very pleased with the fact that he does regional NCAA football for us. So notwithstanding your earlier palpably satirical, deleterious comments concerning me, Bud, it's a delight to have you next to me.
1972, that's when Cosell was as famous.
Oh,
he was at
huge.
His
Monday Night
his
Football
peak.
And
yeah.
All that.
He had his own talk show. And
oh, that's right. I'd forgotten about that.
You know, and he would famously on Wide World of Sports would interview Muhammad Ali.
Mm-hmm. And get into it with
yes,
him.
Yes. At least there's always been debate whether it was,
sure.
You know, staged somewhat.
Right.
But speaking of Ali, he came to Arkansas.
Yes, he was passing through, and Channel 7 talked to him.
I would say as I come face to face with people, I have many admirers and fans in the black and the white race here in Arkansas, Mississippi, Georgia, New York, Florida. I see no difference in the people. I sign as many or more autographs now than I ever have. But I would say that a few boxing officials have did a few things that was not justified, and a few judges in courts and I would say juries, but it's not the people as a whole. It's just a few in power that I would say runs the structure, but it's not the people. All the people are with me.
That was 1969.
Yeah, so we're at the, you know, in the middle of the civil rights struggle. And Muhammad Ali, do you know why he was in Little Rock?
I have no idea.
Just popped?
It just was passing through, apparently.
Yeah. Now, we've heard from some sports figures, but there's a lot of politicians.
A lot of politics. This next one is a classic. It's from January of 1967. Winthrop Rockefeller had just been sworn in as the new governor, had defeated Orville Faubus. And while Rockefeller was getting all the attention, Jim Pitcock, who was the reporter at the time, saw Faubus. He had just quietly, alone, walked out of his office and was walking down the steps of the Capitol, leaving.
These are the first few seconds of Faubus after a dozen years not being governor.
I leave with some sadness, but without any second thoughts about my decision. I leave with relief that I can lay down the burdens which I've had to bear for 12 years, all the many problems, all the many things that needed to be done, and we've accomplished some of them, but it's never, you're never in government able to satisfy everyone or do all the things that should be done. So those are the feelings I have as I leave, the same as I had anticipated.
Governor, you were talking about burdens. What do you consider your heaviest burden in office?
Well, the effort to keep a good administration, to guard against weakness among all of your people, and the temptations and the persuasions that are put in their way. Some have a tendency, you know, to become a little too egotistical when they get a position. Others lose their zest for the job after a while and begin to think about doing more for themselves than for the people whom they serve. But I think I've kept this to a minimum in my administration, and yet it's always a struggle to prevent weakness, defections, yielding to temptation and pressures.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's more than 10 years after the Central High Crisis.
Mm-hmm. And he was still referring to it.
Right.
He made the right decision. He
was not going to back off of
that. He was not going to. Now, I don't think he ever did.
Now, this next one that you have,
mm-hmm.
from 1968, right?
Right. This one had to go in there. This is a young congressman by the name of David Pryor, interviewed in Washington regarding the budget deficit.
Some things never change, right?
Well, and just wait, it's kind of ironic.
I do think that we've got to face the facts that we have a $29 billion deficit that we're going into in this fiscal year. I do think that we've got to realize that we can't, as a government, go out here and successfully borrow $29 billion without it causing some inflation. But I do think, too, on the other hand, that the taxpayers of America are at their point now of almost no return taxation-wise. The president, in my estimation, is shooting for a 10% tax increase with the possibilities of hoping to get, say, a 6 to 8% increase. But right now, I think he's got tough sledding. And at this point, and unless they can show me we're in a very critical stage of a national emergency, I'm at this point not going to vote for the tax increase.
Oh, the good old days.
$29 billion.
Just in the billions.
Yeah.
And speaking of Democrats and politics, this is where the entertainment and the politics crossed over just a little bit. Glenn Campbell in 69, you know, was in True Grit.
Right.
They held a premiere at the Cinema 150 in Little Rock, and at the last minute, somehow it became a Democratic Party fundraiser and caused a little bit of controversy.
I was asked to do the premiere by Paramount, and I didn't know about the controversial stuff until like couple of weeks ago.
How do you feel about being back here the world premiere at home?
Great, I really do. I never thought to, when you used to go pick cotton to get enough money to go see a show, I never thought I'd be making one, and it's really a great thrill.
What's your own political affiliation? Are you a Republican?
I'm a registered Democrat, but I leaned the other way the last time. I think almost everyone in Arkansas is a registered Democrat, aren't they?
Not anymore.
No. that was from 1969 at the premiere of True Grit.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Senator John McClellan.
Yes.
Who was in the Senate for a long time until he was defeated by Pryor, right?
Yes.
Yeah, in the Democratic primary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this one is from the dedication of something that many people are aware of.
Yeah, the McClellan Kerr navigation system.
Yeah.
Generations yet unborn will benefit from the prosperity which this program will bring to the Arkansas River Valley. Now that this great waterway is completed and in operation, we are crossing the threshold of a new area, to an area of progress, unprecedented progress, in the Arkansas River Valley.
And that was 72.
Yeah, and the McClellan Kerr...
navigation system.
I mean, that's something that is kind of taken for granted now. It's hard to remember.
It was landmark. It was huge.
And there was the namesake, or one of the two namesakes.
Mm-hmm. And in Oklahoma, it's known as the Kerr McClellan, isn't
right,
it?
Right, yeah, right.
Because he was the senator from Oklahoma. His colleague, Senator Fulbright, in 74, was very outspoken, not only about the Vietnam War, but about Richard Nixon.
To me, he has no alternative. We have none but for him and his vice president to resign. Now, I want to say again, I want it very clear, that if the president is able to reestablish his leadership and to create some confidence in his capacity to govern, especially in the Congress, then, of course, all right. More power to him. That's what we have to have. And I'd be very delighted to see him do it. But now there is little to indicate he's going to do it.
That was in front of an AFL-CIO audience.
Mm-hmm. Talking about a man who was speaking his mind.
Right. And that was during his last term,
because
a young Dale Bumpers would then...
Right, defeat him.
Right.
You know, I grew up seeing these politicians, assuming that everyone was that well-spoken and that brilliant. And you just, as Arkansans, you take that for granted.
Oh, we had these generations. I mean, we don't have tape of Joe T. Robinson.
But right.
From Joe T. Robinson through generation after candidate.
Wilbur
after,
Mills.
Right.
And then you come to Bumpers and Pryor and
Clinton. Right.
To top it off.
Speaking of native sons, William Fulbright, of course, a native of Fayetteville. Here is perhaps, other than Bill Clinton, the most famous son Arkansas has produced.
You think?
Louis Jordan, Johnny Cash,
yeah.
Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's.
This was in 1974, and he returned to a big homecoming in Kingsland.
I wish I could stay more than just a few minutes, though. I had just about 5 minutes to walk down that country road past where my house was, where I was born. Had to get back on the bus and come get on the train, but I've seen all the people I knew. You know, they were all around there. It's always good to see the old faces. And it's something how all the places seem so much smaller when you go back. You know, like you go back to your old home place, everything seems so much smaller.
And then he did a live concert down at Cummins Prison that was broadcast. I'll have to bring that in sometime.
Oh, yeah.
It was broadcast by KATV, and we have the entire concert. Yes.
Wow. Wow.
There's some great material.
Yeah, we're just scratching the surface here.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned Bill Clinton. I want to hear something from him now. And this is something that he didn't do that often in his political career.
Only twice.
Twice.
And
once kind of expected, once not.
Right. This was the big upset. Frank White in 1980 beat him, and I was actually at Frank White's headquarters that night working for Channel 7. And it came as such a shock that the concession speech didn't actually take place until the next day.
I want you to know today that I consider myself to be among the most fortunate people in this country. I grew up in an ordinary working family in this state, was able to go through the public schools and become attorney general and governor and serve people in the way that I had always wanted to since I was a boy. I regret that I will not have two more years to serve as governor because I have loved it. I have probably loved it as much as any person who ever had this office.
And then came back 2 years later and taped a commercial. I'll bring that next time.
Okay.
And we always referred to it as the I'm Sorry ad, where he actually, because Frank White beat him on he pushed two topics, Cubans and car tags. It was the Cuban refugees at Fort Chaffee and raising the price on car tags.
So there's one more here, and this is from 1963, and this might give you goosebumps.
It does. It's actually the dedication of the Greers Ferry Dam, and it took place in October of 63.
I appreciate this opportunity to come here and join you in dedicating this great resource of our country, as well as this district, as well as this state. This is a great country that was given to us, and a great land. It's our job, it seems to me, to make the most of it, to make sure that we in our time plant our forests, use our water, develop our power, provide recreation for our people, do in our time to the extent that we can what Franklin Roosevelt did in his time, and before him what Theodore Roosevelt did in their time.
49 and a half years ago, just a month
before
he would be assassinated.
That's right.
At the Greers Ferry Dam dedication. What do you think when you're listening to all of this?
I'm fascinated. I just can't believe that we still have this, and I'm just so glad that we do, and I'm ready to share it. This is an ongoing process of the Pryor Center, along with what we also do, which is collect interviews and stories of Arkansans.
And you're going to be doing more of that.
Yes.
You got a bus coming.
The Arkansas Story Bus is on the table. We're planning it, and it will travel the state and collect interviews. The idea is much like NPR's StoryCorps, except a TV version, an HD television version. But say we set up in a town and you want to interview your grandmother or your father, you come in and sign up. You can come into our mobile studio and you conduct the interview yourself. Have them tell their stories. When you finish, we give you a copy to keep for your family, and then the Pryor Center keeps one.
That's great.
Oh, it's going to be wonderful.
And you're going to have more of these.
Yes.
Oh, good. I want to hear that.
Whenever you'll have me, I'll dig some up.
All right. Well, I want to hear that Bill Clinton I'm sorry commercial next time.
Okay.
All right. Thank you,
Randy. Thank you.
Randy Dixon is the director of the Pryor Center for Oral and Visual History at the University of Arkansas. He talked to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums. You can learn more at pryorcenter.uark.edu. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Jasper. Before we go, we do have a little bit of business to take care of. Last week, Kyle Kellums asked a trivia question, and the winner is going to receive some tickets to the Blues in the Natural State Festival, which will be April 5th and 6th. The question was, when was the Ozark Blues Society formed? The answer is 2001. And we gathered up all of the correct answers, and the winner we've selected is Douglas Rhodes. So congratulations to Douglas Rhodes. Tickets will be at will call, and we'll also email you to let you know that you have won in case you missed this today. Again, the Blues in the Natural State Festival is scheduled for Friday, April 5th and Saturday, April 6th. Performers include John Lee Hooker Jr., James Super Chicken Johnson, Leah and the Mojo Doctors, Earl and Them, and many others. If you'd like some more information, you can visit the website ozarkbluessociety.org. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. I will be back along with my co-host, Kyle Kellums. Again, thanks for listening, and I hope your week is off to a fantastic start.